What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me at the round table, I welcome Leslie Baker. Leslie is a parent. Her interests are health and wellness, and she is with the Tallahassee chapter of the Lynx Incorporated.
Thank you for having me.
Zanani Johnson. Zanani is attending the University of West Florida. She will be majoring in psychology and criminal justice. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
And Paula DeBose Johnson is a parent. Her interests are youth, girls, community development, and she is with the Capital City Youth Development Corps.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Maya King. Maya is a sophomore at the Howard University.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and we are very glad to have her here. Her interest and major is journalism and public relations.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And Penny Ralston. Penny is with Florida State University. She is the Director of Youth Health Leadership, and she's a professor and dean emeritus.
Good to be here. Thank you.
We're glad to have you all, okay? Welcome to 411 Team. The ranks of the overweight and obese are rapidly increasing in the United States. 23% of the population is obese. 1 in 3 are 58 million adults aged 20 through 74 are overweight. Overweight and obesity are more than a cosmetic concern. Overweight and obesity are known factors for diabetes, high blood pressure, gallbladder disease, arthritis, respiratory problems, and some forms of cancer. More than 1 in 5 children and adolescents aged 6 through 17 are overweight. This is particularly ironic because the American culture is obsessed with dieting and thinness. We spend more than $53 million a year on weight loss products and services. What's going on? Why are we seeing more and more weight problems in America? What about our eating habits? Do nutritional value, does that make any difference? So we're going to explore all those things. I know I got the right folks here at the table with me to educate me and my listening audience. I think my first question I'd like to pose will be to the young folks. And I'd just like to know, what is basically the current attitude among your peers concerning weight in today's culture? Is weight an issue at all, or is this something just old folks are concerned about?
Well, I'll speak from my point of view, being in college. No one wants to gain that freshman 15, but somehow everybody does, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Weight gain is, I come from a very, very weight conscious environment being in college. Everyone is concerned about how they look and whether that's, you know, thin or thick or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever they're going for. But I think that it is an issue. I think that we are moving towards combating it. There's a gym on campus. Everyone goes there. Even while I'm at home, a lot of my college friends, I see them at my home gym. There are a lot of healthier options. You see that all across the country, healthier options in the cafeterias. Colleges have taken note to the trends that students are following, well, for sure.
Good. And what are you seeing?
Well, I just graduated from high school, mm-hmm. and personally, when I would always take snacks to school, I would always have grapes and things of that nature, and my friends and I actually love fruits. We love it just a little more than we actually like vegetables, but like Maya just said, you know, since I'm going to college this year, no one wants to gain the freshman 20, so with the help of my family, I was able to create a schedule, and that's important because part of the healthy lifestyle is finding balance, so once you find balance, you know, mm-hmm. you're able to be healthy mentally, physically, and emotionally, and overall, you'll be able to live a healthy lifestyle once you find balance.
What did you find, since you're just out of high school, your peers when you were in high school, What was their attitude? Was anybody concerned really about weight, or was it kind of a cavalier type attitude? And the reason I asked is just to see if there is a difference between what you're seeing at high school and what you're seeing in college.
I think we're all concerned about weight, but overall, most of my friends and I, we have high self-esteem. So if we felt okay with our bodies, then that's what we exuded pretty much. But overall, we all pretty much played a sport, whether we were in the band or we cheered or we did football. Mm-hmm. We were always active for the most part. The things that we actually had to work on were more like choosing. When we were able to go off campus for lunch, we couldn't choose, like, McDonald's. We always tried to find something healthier, like maybe Chick-fil-A, where we could get a salad or actually just bring our lunch sometimes, because the trend was going off campus, always eating, mm-hmm. eating something fast that was down the street. So we had to change our mindset when it came to that. But overall, weight to everybody, I think.
Okay. And I think to Zanani's point, it's certainly a matter of environment. You know, I'm fortunate enough to be in a place where healthy living is valued. But I think that there are a lot of people, especially people from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, who live in food deserts. If my only option is McDonald's, Wendy's, or Burger King, that's going to be my only option. And, you know, I'm not going to get a salad if I go to Wendy's. I'm just not.
Yeah. And well, so, it's iceberg, and we right. know what iceberg is about.
Exactly, and it's got a lot of sugar and everything mm-hmm. else in it. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult then, obviously, for me to be healthy.
Exactly, and it's also about what's cheaper, like how much can we afford, because we can't always afford to have our parents buy the freshest fruits and vegetables. Sometimes the cheapest and easiest thing is going to McDonald's or going to Wendy's and getting that 4 for $4. Like, that was the biggest thing when it came out for us. So
that
we had
so
to change
true.
Our mindset.
Excellent point. And I think you mentioned the social economic status determining what we eat. And not only that, but what is available in those communities. I mean, you know, you go, a lot of people may run in the bodega or the 24, you know, store on the corner, rather, and there's no vegetables in there. There are no mm-hmm. fresh vegetables, and if they are, they're old. There's not anything anyone wants. So I think we have to also take that into consideration, you know, and if the people in those communities would start to demand that stores carry different products, that might help too. So I think you've touched on a number of things. Do you feel overall that there is an emphasis, and this is to all of you, an overemphasis on weight here in the United States?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I agree. Absolutely. And I think that as one of the young people just mentioned, there has to be balance, but we have these conflicting messages, as you mm-hmm. mentioned, and we need you to be re-thin. No, everyone is not built the same. So then you have those young people who struggle with all of those eating disorders. And then, as one of the other young ladies mentioned, we're talking about, can we afford the healthiest option? Mm-hmm. And I think most parents want the most healthy option, but as it was mentioned before, what's available to you. So there's a struggle, there's a disconnect, mm-hmm. there's lack of balance. And as parents, we have to kind of help navigate with the young people the best alternative. So we still struggle with that. So I don't know how you feel about that.
Oh, I agree. I was watching one of the news programs earlier this week, as a matter of fact, and they were discussing a quote-unquote full-figured model, I believe mm-hmm. they call them full-figured. Mm-hmm. Or, mm-hmm. And there was controversy because they said she lost weight. So mm-hmm. could she really be considered full-figured? And she's a 12.
When was 12 considered full?
That's what didn't I know. That. Right. That was my question. Yeah. So I think that the stereotypes are there, the role models that our children are bombarded with on a regular basis in print and on television mm-hmm. have direct impact on how they react and what their attitudes are regarding weight.
And what about culture? We haven't even touched on that. You know, because culture really defines, it defines our beauty. It defines what is attractive.
In our community, the African-American community, tends to feel differently about full-figured women.
Exactly.
So.
And then when you look on television or in any magazine, the hottest thing selling right now are these things called waist trainers. And if you don't have a small, tiny waist with a larger lower body area, you're not as beautiful as someone who is pretty much proportionate everywhere else. So it's like, so am I not healthy if I don't have a thin waist? And then so you find girls looking up famous people's diets, and if you're eating like them, you're like, well,
I've googled the waist trainer.
I look up stars all the time and see what they eat, so maybe I could get a body like them. But then I realized, well, they have a bunch of money, they have a way better facility than I do.
A lot of it has been altered.
Exactly. And that's what people don't understand. Right. They actually get surgery. Yeah. So then when you look at these famous celebrities, you're like, well,
they represent us.
Exactly. And
that touches on a really interesting idea, because it's one thing to look at someone who is healthy, has a healthy body, and say, okay, this is inspiring me to eat healthier and to live a healthier life. You know, I'll put my cardio in. I'll do what I have to do so that I can look like Serena Williams, for example.
Mm-hmm. She has a beautiful body.
But even
body.
There's so much controversy about her body, saying that she's too buff. But it's like, that's beautiful.
Right.
Me, it's
but
beautiful.
On the other hand, we look at people like,
Taylor Swift,
sure, or even Kim Kardashian, someone who has a body that is literally unattainable.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes us immediately want to exhibit unhealthy behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I look at Kim Kardashian, my first thought is not, okay, well, I need to go to the gym. I need to do squats so that, you know, my behind can look like that.
Well, you know, the other thing is, you know, you can get injections. That's
exactly.
A big thing in South America. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's really big to get butt injections.
Exactly.
Okay? And to get lip injections, okay? And, you know, a big behind is considered beautiful,
mm-hmm.
okay? So that's why I threw in, what role does culture play? You know, how significant is culture? It dictates how we're going to look or how we want to look. You tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and I'm going to start with you because I had to interrupt you. Go right ahead. What were you saying?
My thought was just, as we were saying, that sometimes weight and issues of weight can be cultural,
mm-hmm.
depending on what part of the world you're in. There's a beautiful country in Africa. Where Mauritania, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger the woman, the more desirable they are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and that's just not Mauritania. I was in South Africa in Joburg for about, it's been several years back now, but I was there for about 3 months. And that is also the case there, in that they like their women to be, you know, full-bodied women, because it's a reflection on the male. It really is. It's a reflection, and it says, hey, I take good care of my wife, I take good care of my children, and look, they're fed and they're healthy. And so there's nothing wrong with that. That's just, you see that also in the Caribbean. I mean, you see it in other cultures besides just, you know, black. You see black and brown cultures that value you're having a little bit of meat on you. You get into Europe, and, you know, that's what is the beauty standard there. But everybody don't need to look like Twiggy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not appealing.
Why are we subscribing to the European standard?
Well, because we get caught up in that, okay? We buy into that.
And it's easy to do.
I think education is important. You need to understand your body type. You need to know BMI. You need to know all of these things. But you have to also understand if your build is not like someone that you want to emulate, it would be unrealistic for you to believe that you could look like that person.
That's the key.
That's very important.
Realistic. Dr. Austin, we have just been talking, but I want to hear, we're supposed to be talking about YHL when all of this is a component of it and is involved. But can you share with us some of the history of how this organization, this group, this program, this project, whatever it's called, how it evolved?
Well, it starts with the Childhood Obesity Prevention Education Project, and this is an initiative that's a part of the Embrace Initiative funded by the Florida Blue Foundation. So the Florida Blue Foundation looked at the state of Florida and looked at what the issues were and decided on communities that they felt could actually come up with projects that would really impact the whole community around obesity and weight issues. And Tallahassee was chosen, and Dr. Cynthia Harris at Florida A&M University was the person identified to write the grant. And then she selected a leadership team, and I'm a part of the leadership team. And from there, we brought together over 85 organizations, some of them, larger established organizations, some grassroots organizations, and we started working on, what are the needs here in Tallahassee as it relates to making this a healthy place for families and for children in all kinds of ways. So looking at not only what families are doing and, and individuals, but also looking at the broader community as well. And so we worked for a year on a needs assessment and came back with family and youth engagement as a major need. In other words, all the agency organizations and other representatives at the table, we were all talking to each other. Mm-hmm. We were not engaging the families themselves, and particularly the youth themselves, the natural leadership in the community. So that's how we got started.
Okay. And so what is, I guess, the purpose or the mission now? I mean, where are you going?
Well, after the need was identified, we met with community representatives. This included youth organizations that were in COPE, as well as youth organizations identified by COPE that were not at the table, and young people. And we worked for 6 months and came up with a mission statement that we wanted to develop a model where youth would be the leaders for health in the community, and that they would, first of all, work on their own health if they needed to, work in their family setting, work with their peers, and then more largely impact the broader community.
Just what does the youth health leadership model include? What is it?
Well, it's a program that's over a limited number of weeks. We start with an induction ceremony. The youth are selected, and we'll talk about how that changed over the years. And then they go through a 6-week program. It has three components. They have training sessions where they have young dynamic role models who talk to them about, certainly diet and nutrition, physical activity. And we talk about total health because there's so many aspects of our health that are beyond those, two things. The main thing we talk about is why. Why? A lot of times we in health program, when we just talk about what you need to do, we don't say why. Mm-hmm. What are the consequences if you don't do these things? Mm-hmm. So they're very. It's kind of a rigorous little training session. I don't know how rigorous you all thought it was, but we thought it was rigorous. And then we move into, they go out into the community and they do an application rotation. That just means they decide if they want to go with a professional in health and shadow that person, or they might want to do service learning with a community organization. But the whole idea is they're applying what they've been learning in a community setting. And then they come back and they plan a health campaign themselves. And all during this period, they're leading. I mean, it's one time when 14 to 18-year-olds are making the decisions about what's going to happen in an organization. They love that part. So they elect their own officers. They lead the meetings. They make the decisions. And they come up with their campaign. That's their campaign. The parents are there to, certainly advise and help.
You know, the staff are there to advise and help, but it's their decisions.
In listening to this program, there may be some kids or parents or folks in the community, whomever, that want to find out more information, that would like to participate. Is there a process, and if so, what is it if someone hears it and go, I think I'd like to be a part of that? I mean, is it at schools? I mean, where is it? How does one assess?
So we do a pretty good job of getting the word out in a variety of ways, including through social media, about the application process. So it goes out community-wide, and then applications are due in January. And we make those selections in January and then go through an interview process. The young people actually come with a parent, and they're interviewed. Okay. So this makes it a little more what we are looking for there is their real interest in health, okay. you know, and their desire to be a leader. So it's a little bit of the commitment and then also parental involvement, which is so important, that they got parents that were really interested in seeing them achieve.
So now if someone wants to get an application, where do they go? What do they do? Share that.
They can go to the YHL. We have a Facebook page, which was actually a Cohort One's project. They developed a Facebook page, which we still use, and they just need to go on Facebook and just, you know, search for Youth Health Leadership. That's where the application appears. Also, they can go to the website for the Better Health and Life Center at FSU, and that's bhlcenter.fsu.edu.
Would you give that to us again?
Yes. Yes, sorry. bhlcenter.fsu.edu.
Okay. How many people do you have participating at this point?
Well, all total in our, we've had four cohorts, so we've had 40 young people participate. Our first year, we learned a lot, and we had a 65% completion rate. We started with 13, ended up with 8. But since then, we've had a 100% completion rate.
That's good. So it's been going on 4 years then?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's what I want to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
What does participation mean? I mean, let's say, I asked them, what did participation mean? I mean, were there monthly meetings, weekly meetings? What did you have to do?
With COPE and with YHL, once you agree, you are in it. You see, I was cohort one. I'm in college now, and I'm right here. So participation is a marriage. And that's a good thing. It's a really good thing. We're building community here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that my COPE colleagues are truly my family. I've known these people since my earliest days of high school, and they really got my start in leadership and even Tallahassee involvement.
What keeps you coming?
I think it's just that. The relationships that I've formed, they've all been very positive. The Childhood Obesity Prevention Education Project is an incredible brainchild of the Tallahassee community.
What is it? I mean, I'm looking at you, but
it's so hard to define because you have at COPE meetings. I remember you would see everyone from the mayor of Tallahassee to a community grower, someone who just has a plot in his or her backyard. That's really what COPE is. Everyone is united by a wish to see an improvement in the community, but that just spans so many different things. It's all for the children, you know, for childhood obesity. That's really what our goal is, alleviating that issue.
We found ourselves, Maya and I, participating with iGrow as a result of our relationship with COPE, going to the Dade Street garden.
Explain what iGrow is.
Yeah, you can.
Go right ahead.
She was saying, going to the Dade Street garden and garden.
iGrow is a community garden program where people in the community that may not otherwise get fresh fruits and vegetables can actually plant, and the young people tend the garden and take care of the vegetables that are growing, and they share the yield. So some of it is for purchase, and we found ourselves going down at the end of the week sometimes and getting fresh greens or fresh tomatoes or fresh vegetables. But it gives the young people an attachment and an appreciation for the earth because they compost and they work the soil, and they can actually watch the fruits of their labor come up out of the ground. and be consumed.
And that's just one part of it. That's one part of the entire cope animal.
Oh, okay. So, Nani, would you share with us, you know, what it is that you find just, you know, that grabs you and kept you involved?
I just really have a passion for advocating about issues that I see in my community. When I first started the Youth Health Leadership Program in 2013, there was an issue with, you know, obesity and healthy living and healthy lifestyles and overall just mental health. So I started the program. I was able to complete the classes and the application rotations. And then Dr. Ralston inspired me so much in the program overall that I was able to do a fittest family challenge at my church, where we had a pretty much a competition where families would sign up. And I remember I got a local gym to help, Capital Health Plan, and then a bank, and we were able to raffle off prizes to the fittest family. So overall, it was just being able to advocate to people about, you know, if you eat healthy, live a healthy lifestyle, you'll be able to live longer, look better, you know, and just overall be happy and successful in your life.
How'd you get people to buy into that? Because so I think the media depicts it as folks are really kind of indifferent and they're not connected and they're not involved. But that's not what I hear from you. You know, I hear that you're saying people really were very interested. What did you do? What was the secret?
I told them my story. When I first started YHL, I was not exercising. My mom was eating, like, had us eating right and everything. We would go to the store and eat fruits and vegetables. But what's the point of eating fruits and vegetables if you're not exercising? Like, it's all a balance. Like, you just don't always want to eat fruits and vegetables. So I would go to McDonald's and everything. But after completing YHL and seeing a lady, she was like 75 years old with a six-pack. She just looked so healthy and so happy. I said, well, you know, Ma, I think I'm going to try out for track. Even though track, you know, that dream
died
quickly. I joined my high school's cheer team, where I was able to lose weight and mentally be back in order and just be able to succeed at school. I ended up making straight A's after that because, you know, it's pretty much a balance. So after I shared my success story, others were like, well, I want to do that too. So I got some of my friends involved in YHL, and from there, we just all worked together.
If I could share a little bit, too, I think what is unique about it, you hear youth health leadership. I heard it, I saw it, I read it, I agreed that she should participate, but I really didn't think that the youth were really going to lead it. And that was the magic behind all of this. The youth lead it, and youth bring people with them. If you want any project to succeed, if you add young people to the equation, then you're going to have followers. So I think for the young people to lead this, they embraced it. They shared their information with others out in the community, and they went forward and shared it with their families. And as Maya said, they have kept us here. And some of the intangibles about this that we've seen in our family, Zanani got us up and moving. And for a person who I prefer to sleep when I get a chance, but she's like, you know, Mom, you'll die young, so you need to get up. I want you to be around. So she made sure that all of us were involved in that process. And as we got up and got moving, of course, it was easier to do. But the intangible was who she became. She's kind of evolved through this process. Zanani is very smart. Both of these young women are beautiful. They're articulate. They're smart. But my daughter would not get up and show you any of those things unless you made her. And she was very reluctant to do that. But after this experience, Dr. Ralston and the team are like, okay, you all are going to lead the meeting. And they would sit down and watch. There was always support back there so that they knew that they weren't alone. And if they stumbled or needed help, there would be adults back there to assist. But they led everything. And she's grown. She's been on radio, television. She's spoken at the university. She's spoken at conferences. So this has opened a lot of different doors and provided a lot of different opportunities for her. So I've just seen her grow tremendously. And that's one of the many things that I love about this project.
Sounds good.
I saw spillover as well. Maya's freshman year at Howard University, she got involved immediately with the campus newspaper, The Hilltop, and one of her first articles dealt with mental health. And I think that impetus came from the mental health component that they were exposed to with youth health leadership.
Absolutely. And I think it's also important that we put it in the context of the Black community, because unfortunately our health issues are not focused on as closely as our counterparts. Mm-hmm. You know, being in YHL, those were my earliest exposures to the true dangers of overeating and of really developing hypertension and really developing diabetes as a Black American woman, mm-hmm. and how heart disease might affect me differently and how sickle cell anemia might affect me differently. Just different things, different mm-hmm. Public health issues. And so, yeah, that was definitely an impetus.
What do you think is the key to the inroads with the Black community as far as getting them to become aware?
I think we're moving towards that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think that the scare factor is...
That's what I wanted to ask you. What is the emerald? What really is the, do you think, is a key to making a change, to you know, requiring people or inspiring people to make a change in the choices that they make and the foods that they eat? And I'm going to let you think about it because we're going to take a brief break shortly. But I wanted you to just kind of share... What was it that aided in those inroads into the community and making them aware of what's going on? You're tuned into 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. We're going to take a brief break, but we will return momentarily. What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen. When it comes to food, Americans always want to supersize. We flock to the all-you-can-eat buffets driven by that common bond to clean our plates. What are you seeing as being a way of changing that, I guess, first I'll say, and then I'll come to you about the other. How do we redirect that?
I don't know. I'm very optimistic. I think we're moving towards that. Okay. I do, but uh-huh. I'll let Zanani take it.
I'm going to chime in and say I think that the earlier we start, the better. I mm-hmm. think that if you're waiting until the young people are in their teens, you may have kind of missed the boat. Mm-hmm. It needs to start in kindergarten and pre-kindergarten, where they know and understand the importance of the healthy lifestyles. And it needs to be model behavior.
Great, because, absolutely. You know, we hear the other side. I mean, when you're on television, when you look at television and any of the media, you're bombarded with eat, 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 come here, you get our food, you get, you know, 2 pounds of crab legs, and you're encouraged to do that. So that, you know, that is why I ask, how do we change that? How do we... I'm looking at you, Sana. You have suggestions?
I say promoting balance in a healthy lifestyle. We're not saying that you cannot indulge in some cake or your chocolate. Like, we all love that, but we're mm-hmm. saying, hey, sometimes it's okay to put down that chocolate bar and go for a walk if you don't want to jog, and get a salad. Get up at the buffet. Get a salad. You know, add stuff that makes it taste good, because sometimes we have this mindset where eating healthier is more expensive, and if I can go to McDonald's and get something off the dollar menu, I'm saving my money. But in the long run, if you think long term, you're really not saving yourself money, because you're going to have to go get those high blood pressure pills, going to have to take yourself to the hospital. And, like, what's also very interesting, if you just talk to maybe your grandparent or anything, and you ask them, like, well, how come, you know, my grandma mm-hmm. is 97. I ask her all the time, how come you can still eat potato chips and not have heartburn or anything? She said, because I didn't have McDonald's growing up. I didn't have fast food growing up. Only thing we were able to do, we didn't have phones. We didn't have electronics. All we had was outside running in the grass. So that's what we did. So if you eat healthy now and you balance, you'll be able to live longer and still eat your snacks and the things you like to indulge in every once in a while as a treat.
Would you share with me and the listening audience really what comprises a well-balanced diet?
Half of your plate goes to your fruits and vegetables. They teach you that in YHL. It's called the My Plate.
That's true. Okay.
So, right. You know, half of your plate should be devoted to fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
And also, what I also learned in YHL is that you need color on your plate. That's how you know you're doing something right, because you need your greens and your oranges. You know, if you have a bunch of color, you're going right. You're doing something
right. That was what I was going to say. The My Plate is revolutionary because it, you know, it replaced the traditional food pyramid that all of us are used to. And it's been a while since I've looked at the My Plate, but one thing that I do remember is that you need a lot of color on your plate. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm a soul food plate is delicious, but you've got like varying levels of brown on that, and a really healthy. Right. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Like the color, okay. As far as the color, and a healthier diet or a healthier meal might be a little more colorful. I mean, just thinking about a salad, a really good salad, you might have a little bit of fruit, lettuce, whatever else you want in there. It's colorful. And those colors are good for you, the natural ones, not your, you know, red dye number two or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And as a parent that was listening to those different workshops as well, they started working with this My Plate initiative. They started promoting that with very young children. I think they said, kindergarten. Okay. And that's exactly, as you mentioned, what they need. We start early with the young people, teaching them these things in nursery school and elementary school.
As we look at weight issues, have you seen a difference in gender? I mean, is the attitude from males, among males, different than the attitude females? And if so, share some of that with us.
I mean, as far as a female's point of view, it's looked down upon if we're overweight and we're larger than the average female. But if a male is
What's the average female? So that I guess I'm just totally lost there.
What society says we should look like and what our culture says.
Mm-hmm. Well, society and culture can be in conflict now. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really more the outward appearance of being thin, just appearing thin.
You can really be like full figured and be healthy, and that's the point that I'm headed towards.
Zanani's right though, because if at least in my experience, if a young man is overweight, he's swole. He's on his way to being a defensive lineman. Yeah. You know, he still serves a purpose if he's overweight. Mm-hmm. However, if a woman, you know, has put on a few pounds, oh my gosh, she's let herself go. What is she going to do?
Or she can't do this specific sport. Mm-hmm. She has to do this specific sport.
Or she can't do anything at all.
Or she's not as beautiful. But if a football player is 300 pounds, you know, and he's stuffing his face with anything fried, he's good. He's about to make some serious money. But as soon as a girl does it, she's looked down on like, oh, no, that's not cute.
She's not taking care of herself.
She's not.
But I will say, even so, on the other side, our nation does have a serious issue with the way that we even look at people who are overweight, regardless of gender, you know.
Yes and no. I mean, we spend all this money on weight loss products, yet we're also on the other side saying, eat, eat, eat. So we're sending double messages. Okay? You know, something is in conflict. What are we doing wrong? We're talking about exercising. Okay? I mean, not you. I mean, I'm talking about America generically. What's happening? Where's the breakdown? I mean, is it because it can't just be not eating correctly. I think you all have already touched on it because it's a combination of several factors.
There's a disconnect. I mean, there's it's a cottage industry now. The biggest loser. My 600-pound life. Gastric bypass surgery.
Lipo.
So, yeah.
I think also this whole notion of kids not going outside anymore. This whole video game lifestyle. Yes. And that's not healthy for you. You have to go outside and spend a little time. And if you go out there, you're not going to really sit. You're going to walk. You're going to move. And you have to do these things. So I remember my children didn't have video games. We didn't allow that. But at the same time, my girls were like their mother. They didn't really like the outside. So we had to plan an activity. So it couldn't just be go out the door and play. So it would be either go to the beach, go to the park, do something at the park just to get them outside. So I think that's one of the biggest culprits.
And well, you know, they say Pokemon Go is has got people moving.
Yeah. Well, people are running into the streets without paying attention. I don't understand that.
Cars moving more, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot more. Maybe that's the start. Maybe we figure out a creative mm-hmm. way to get folks to move.
And I think it's important for us to also note that we're moving forward, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, to fail to realize that we haven't really, as a nation, cut down on our unhealthy food intake would be to completely, like, negate the purpose of COPE. Mm-hmm. We really have made progress, mm-hmm. especially in the Tallahassee community.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, I look around in my core group of friends, and none of us are overweight. Of course, that has to do a lot with the fact that we all exist in environments where we have easy access to fruits and vegetables and knowledge of how to live healthily. But, you know, we contradict ourselves. But at the same time, if I could, you know, put a weight in front of us, it would lean heavier towards a population of people who are really becoming more weight conscious and body conscious in a healthy way.
What is your ideal female image and your ideal male image? I mean, what do they look like? Who are they?
Someone who is happy with him or herself regardless of what he or she looks like, truly. Someone who is, I mean, if you're unhealthy, then, you know, there are.
But you can be unhealthy and still be happy
sure.
with yourself.
And
or, like you said, a size two and still not be healthy.
And those are strides that we have to make. But I can't really, I don't think, identify a physical. Okay. Yeah.
And that's why I was asking that. Because, you know, so many people think, well, you need to look like
such and such.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case.
Mm-mm. Exactly. You were going to say something?
She touched on it pretty much.
Okay.
I just want to add in here as we're talking about, healthy families, that the environment of the community makes a big difference. And what I've seen in Tallahassee, and I think COPE can take a little credit for this, is when you see gardens right now on the south side, we have an iGrow garden that's very visible. You know, that, you know, you see it and you're interested in it and you want to know, well, you know, what does that food taste like? When you see Cascades Park and you have a chance to mm-hmm. go there free mm-hmm. of charge, you know, and enjoy that, you know, it becomes a natural part of having a healthy community. And I think Tallahassee has made great strides in moving from being trying to be healthy, but to really physically being a healthier community in our footprint.
Now, Zanani, you just finished Rickards High School.
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Can you address the school lunches there? Now, I know really by the time you're a senior, people don't hang around. But what about the school lunches? Do you see a change there? Okay, can you share that with us? Just maybe what you may have seen.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure that everyone who attends Rickards High School gets free lunch because I got free lunch for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a lot of healthy options. We had, you know, pizza can be healthy. Pizza can be very healthy. Our cafeteria workers worked really hard on making sure our meals were very fresh. We had a salad bar. We had fresh vegetables and fruits every day. Even on the side where it wasn't free and you could actually buy the chips, we had baked chips.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear. Yeah, exactly.
We had cookies, but we had nice cookies. The cookies were really good. We had a lot of water available, and as far as juice goes, we had more so dairy products like our milks.
Okay.
As far as the breakfast, I'm not sure, but I know mm-hmm. that they had fresh breakfast till we had more so cereals available.
What about vending machines? Do you have a lot of those?
And did they any of our vending machines worked, but maybe that worked in our favor.
That's good.
They made mention of that.
Right. Yeah.
If they did, I remember that it was strictly like in the weight room where we would have like our Gatorades and our water bottles, but they always were out of Gatorade, so we had a lot of water. So that's all we could pretty much get.
We hear so much about water consumption. You must have 8 glasses of water. Can you all address that? Is that necessary, or is it just good that you have water? I mean, do you have to have, 2 quarts of water, or no, 1 gallon of water, whatever they're saying now? Can you address that? Do you know if that is the case?
Well, I sit at a desk all day for the most part, and I try to drink as much water as possible while I'm doing that. But I think it also goes back to the whole idea of balance. I get my water in some of the juice that I drink early in the morning. I have a cup of tea at least once a day. I get my water there. The foods that I eat also. It's definitely, like we've really been talking about, just a balance. You know, if I'm chugging a bunch of water all day by the gallon, that's not healthy.
Right. And we have kind of skirted this issue, but I know we've touched on it. What about food preparation? And I think you touched on it because you were talking about not having fried food versus, you know, broiling food versus baking food. Can you address that?
That's really important for sure. And I think, I mean, even the foods that we decide to go out and eat, processed food is everywhere. Mm-hmm. And we're finding more and more how awful that is for us. So it really, I mean, it's in our favor to go ahead and prepare our foods ourselves. Not all of us have the time to do that, but you, of course, have to make sure that not everything you eat is fried. Not everything you eat has to be baked either.
Right.
You know, or there's a balance.
And that's not, that seems to be the key, that there is a balance. Another controversial issue that you often hear about is vitamin consumption.
Vitamins.
How important are vitamins? I mean, in addition to what you just get out of your normal diet, do you think it's important to have a supplement of vitamins? Have you all found that to be the case? And I guess I'm looking at you.
And I think we have to be careful because, you know, some of these questions are, you know, for a registered dietitian or a medical doctor.
I'm very much aware. But I'm just asking you all, you know, is vitamins something you're pushing in your organization? I'm just trying to find out information.
Well, it's kind of a complex topic. You know, I mean, if you would talk to some dietitians, you know, they would say that, you know, you can get, you know, most of what you need, you know, in what you eat,
exactly.
in your nutrients. I think, but, you know, that's a point in time as you grow older. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a need maybe for a multivitamin, you know, and so you got to go to your doctor and to your dietitian and use their guidance in what you do supplement with.
Yeah. With young folks, I don't think it's really, it's what you said. If you eat correctly, if you're having a well-balanced diet, doesn't seem like the supplemental vitamins are necessary. And I brought that up because you hear a lot about it on television. They're always pushing vitamins, you know, vitamins to help you build mass, vitamins to help you lose, you know, whatever. And that's why
In my experience, I actually took vitamins last year, only because being in a new environment, even a new climate, going from Florida to Washington, D.C., I was falling ill all the time. So those vitamins were just helping me keep my immune system up more than anything else.
Even in our household, mostly during cold and flu season, we push vitamin C. But it's even hard to get Zanani to take a vitamin C pill. So we try to find other options for her. But you are supposed to get most of your nutrients from your food. If you're eating the right way, your body will work and function the way that it was designed to.
Again, under the guidance of your physician.
Yes. That's an important detail.
Course. You know, every individual is going to be a little different. So,
well, we've, of course, run out of time, and there's 1,000 things I'd like to say, but I'll turn to you, Dr. Austin, to find out, you know, What's happening with YHL and COPE? Is there something we need to be aware of, something on the forefront that the listening audience may, you know, want to tune into or connect with?
Well, we're at an interesting place. We just had our big COPE extravaganza last Saturday to thank the community and to share some of our achievements.
Now, is that an annual thing?
No, that was the end of our six-year funding cycle with the Florida Blue Foundation. Okay. So now we're trying to figure out, as we go forward, what additional funding do we need? What kind of focus will we have? I will say that there will be a YHL cohort 5.
Okay, we'll be recruiting. I'll have to stop you. I'll have to stop you and have you come back because we are out of time. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. This edition of 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Team podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.